This meeting of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will now come to order. Please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This morning, we will start with a presentation from the Stanislaus County Safety Leadership Recognition. We have quite a number of them today. We would like to thank them for everything they've done for being accident-free and showing improvement. Saved the county quite a bit of money this last year. Mr. Delaner, would you like to start with the presentation?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, CEO, Mr. Robinson, County Council, Mr. Doring. My name is David Delaner, Deputy Executive Officer in the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. As you are aware, the Safety Board has a goal in its strategic plan to recognize the safety leadership on a quarterly basis before this Board of Supervisors. And so today there are 32 certificates of commendation and to various county departments. You've heard two presentations, but 30 of the certificates are going to be awarded to those departments who previously presented as a catch-up over the last two quarters, and then we'll be back on time. So we have divided our presentation into four groups. The first group is the accident-free for fiscal year 07-08. Then we'll go to the injury trend over the last past fiscal year, the BHRS presentation, and then we'll do this quarter's presentation, who we're going to express appreciation to a couple of people who have served for a long time. So without further ado, I'd like to have the accident-free for fiscal year 07-08 folks come up. This would include area agency on aging and veterans, a board of supervisors, children and family commission, cooperative extension, county council, LAFCO, law library, San Sara, Stancog, and treasure tax collector.
Okay. On this presentation, Supervisor O'Brien, who leads our safety department there, has had done a remarkable job in part of this improvement, so I'd like to have him give out these certificates, and if the board then would form a receiving line, we'd like to shake everybody's hand for the good work that you've done. So we'll start out with the accident-free.
Mr. Chairman, I don't deserve any credit for this. What we've done with our safety in this county is pretty incredible over the last few years. We started, when I was first elected, we started with a safety board that didn't meet. And I guess the only thing I get credit for is being a thorn in the side. And I've been a pretty big thorn. But where the credit lies is, one, with all of our departments, all of our employees. These are the ones that have improved our safety record here at the county. Everywhere from our safety leaders to the CEO's office, department heads, the safety representatives, and each and every employee that works for Stanislaus County. They have done their part, and it's twofold. It's a win-win situation. First of all, we don't like to see accidents because we don't like to see our employees suffer. Having someone at home or in the hospital or anything else because they got injured at work is not what we want. The other half of the equation is the financial savings that there are. And in these days and times where we are so stretched for every single dollar, the amount of money that our employees have saved us is just incredible. And like I said, each and every dollar counts right now. So that's why you see all five supervisors up here, because we want to thank each and every one of you, and we want you to take our thanks back to your employees and let them know how much we appreciate everything they've done. Mr. Chairman, the first group is for injury-free departments for an entire year. And again, that's just incredible, too.
How do you want to announce each one?
you'd want me to hold them.
That would be great. Okay, we're going to start with Area of Aging Veterans. The Board of Supervisors Office. Children's and Families Commission. The Ag Cooperative Extension. County Council's Office. LAFCO. Stanislaus County Law Library. Stan Sarah. And Stanislaus County Treasurer Tax Collector.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon. Thank you.
Okay, our next group will be a reduced injury trend over the past five fiscal years. There are 18 of these folks. They're coming from the departments of Alliance WorkNet, Assessor's Office, Auditor Controller, Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, CSA, the Chief Executive Office, Department of Child Services, Clerk Recorder, District Attorney, Department of Environmental Resources, Health Services Agency, Library, Parks, Probation, Public Works, Regional 911, Strategic Business Technology, and the Sheriff.
Again, thank you for all of your hard work. We understand we are an organization of over 4,000 employees, and it's impossible to be injury-free, although we're striving for it. We understand that, especially in the line of work that many of you do, it's impossible to have an injury-free department. However, what you have is a declining trend, and that we appreciate and we want to recognize and thank you. And again, we want our thanks to pass down to your employees as well. We'll start with the Alliance WorkNet. And then the Assessor's Office.
Thank you very much.
And the Stanislaus County Auditor Controller's Office.
Mr. Larry Hall.
Thank you. And Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. And Stanislaus County Community Services Agency. And the Stanislaus County Chief Executive Office. Stanislaus County Department of Child Services. Stanislaus County Clerk Office.
Reporter.
Clerk Reporter, I'm sorry, Lee.
Thank you.
So I'm supposed to read these.
I have they're with me.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Stanislaus County District Attorney's Office. Stanislaus County Department of Environmental Services. Stanislaus County Health Services Agency.
Thank you.
You did all the work.
Thank you. Yeah, I did.
Stanislaus County Public Library. Stanislaus County Parks and Recreation Department. We've seen you twice.
We'll get
San Luis County Probation Department. Stanislaus County Public Works Department. Stanislaus County Regional 911 Center. Stanislaus County Strategic Business Technology, SBT as we know it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department.
Thank you.
And that last one's a very difficult department to deal with injuries because of the line of work the Sheriff's Department does. So a special thanks to Adam Christensen for all your support in your department. It's a very tough department with injuries, and you've made a huge improvement.
Okay, the third group is representative from the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. They'll be getting two certificates today, one for reducing their on-the-job injuries by 68% and cost by $102,000 from fiscal year, or no, from 02 to 08. And the second certificate is they doubled their safety committee attendance and implemented the safety program for their department.
So I want to reiterate those numbers. Reduced on-job injuries by 68% in a reduction of $102,000 in expense for this one department alone. So we want to thank you very much for all your hard work and everybody's hard work that works in your department.
I wasn't expecting that. I gladly accept this on behalf of the department. Without the leadership of the Board of Supervisors and the leadership in our department and all of the managers and supervisors and coordinators in the department, as well as each and every line staff, we wouldn't be getting this. It's not me, and it's not really Denise or the department head. It stems from the leadership all the way down, and the staff really did it themselves. We changed the culture.
Okay, now we're caught up. So today we would like to make two presentations to two longtime employees, both of whom have served for 15 years as a safety representative in their departments. Jan James upon her retirement from Regional 911 and John Turner upon his retirement for the County Services Agency.
We got a certificate for you from you're retiring from the county.
Yep.
So you can't not another 15 years left in you there for the county service there. Well, you're doing really good right now, and congratulate you. So how about saying a few words to our audience?
Well, just thank you very much for the recognition, and I do thank the county for supporting safety. I've done a lot of things in my 34 years with the county, but nothing is more important than ensuring that we keep each other safe, well, prevent that chronic pain and suffering. And so hopefully we've gotten somebody the right chair and taught them how to adjust it properly. That's worthwhile.
Okay, great. Well, here's your certificate from the board. Thank you for your service to the county. Hey, Jan James. You also have 15 years. You're retiring Thursday, okay. How many years with the county?
32.
32 years. Yeah, I'm not even that old. Well, how about saying a few words to the county? No? Okay, well, we got a great safety record, and thank you to your service to the county. I hope this is worthwhile to you for its great career here.
Thank you very much. I would like to particularly recognize Our CEO, Rick Robinson, who has done a marvelous job in supporting the safety program along with Supervisor O'Brien. And I'd like to also recognize Donna Flores and Diane Pearson from my office, who coordinated the logistics of this presentation, and to Sally Goring, who put together the certificate. So thank you very much, and we'll be back the next quarter for more presentations.
Hey, thank you again for all our employees. That is a great safety record and a tremendous improvement. And we hope we can continue. Also, I just have to compliment Supervisor O'Brien, who's really taken charge of this. And since he's been on this committee, he's just made great improvements every year. And I think just this year alone was about a $7 million savings to the county. Great job.
It's our employees, Mr. Chairman. It's our employees.
Our next item is declaring February 2009 Spay and Neuter Month, and February 24th is Spay and Neuter Day in Stanislaus County. Annette Patton.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, Board Member CEO Robinson, and County Council. Annette Patton, Deputy Director for Animal Services. I also would like to invite this morning with me Nicole Montre from Alley Cat Guardians, Pam Mathers from Stanislaus County Humane Society, and Nancy Smith with the Animal Advisory Board. Gandhi once said, "The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated." In that light, I would really like to recognize the Board of Supervisors for claiming February 2009 as Spay and Neuter Month, and for claiming February 24th as Spay Day in Stanislaus County. In 2008, over 10,000 cats entered the shelter in Stanislaus County, and sadly, 82% were euthanized. Nearly 50% of those cats were euthanized due to lack of space. Often these animals are the offspring of cherished family pets, even purebreds, maybe someone's cat or dog that just got out that one time, or maybe the litter was intentional. Spay-neuter is the only permanent 100% effective method of birth control for dogs and cats, and a proven way to reduce the vast numbers of animals who enter our shelter and are only born to die prematurely. In honor of Spay and Neuter Month, the Animal Shelter has a large banner that's been displayed and been created especially for this month to advertise the sale of 600 Spay and Neuter vouchers to the public. This will take place through February 28th. We've done a good job with partnering and supporting other animal welfare groups. The Humane Society and the Animal Cat Guardians have both planned events for this month, and they both would like to share some of their success stories.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to say thank you for all of you for your part in helping us bring more attention to the public on behalf of our animals in the county that do not have a voice for themselves. On behalf of the Humane Society of Stanislaus County, I would like to let you know about our accomplishment in a very short period of time. It went from 3 regular old citizens, including me, to about 9 of us who in just a few months were able to contact veterinarians, and we got on board Village Oak Veterinarian, Crow's Landing, Veterinary Medical Associates, and Sylvan Vets to spay and neuter. At this point, we have 139 to our credit and to their credit, and we expect to do more. We're hoping to hear from a few more vets, and we realize that a lot of what we need to accomplish in the future is more contact with our veterinarians. Their compassion and their hearts are there. And I would like to thank personally some of the people who are here today who've been a part of this: Kathleen Gutierrez, Linda Sherman, Lori Johnston, Karen Mosser, Lori Jo Boyd, and I hope I haven't forgotten anybody. And I want to thank you again for your support. We look forward to much more communication in the future, and we hope that you will continue to support us in every way possible. We realize you're being pulled in 100 different directions. We just want a little bit to come our way. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Nicole Montroy, and I'm CEO of Alley Cat Guardians. I'm happy to be here today to offer Alley Cat Guardians support for the county's Spay Day Declaration. We hope this declaration will encourage citizens to recognize the importance of spay-neuter as the best method to reduce the number of companion animals euthanized in our county every year. Since our inception, Alley Cat Guardians has been dedicated to promoting the humane control of feral and free-roaming cats through the trap-neuter return method. For over 5 years, we have fulfilled this mission by running a monthly, low-cost spay-neuter clinic for stray cats. With our clinic's affordable fees, there's no reason not to get that neighborhood stray fixed. And month after month, more people than we could accommodate would call our hotline, desperate for clinic appointments. We're hopeful that the days of appointment shortages are behind us. I'm happy to report that Alley Cat Guardians is the proud recipient of a grant from PetSmart Charities that fully funds the equipment needed to open our spay-neuter clinic. We're working towards an opening date this spring, and thanks to the generosity of several local veterinarians, we plan on holding clinics 2 days a week with the goal to fix 5,000 cats in the first 12 months of operation. With our new facility, we look forward to better addressing the county's spay-neuter needs, working with the county to conduct a targeted trap-neuter return program, and providing individuals a humane option to control their local feral cat population. Here's to making every day Spay Day at the future Alley Cat Guardians Clinic.
On behalf of the Animal Advisory Board, I'd like to thank the County Board of Supervisors for their support for public education about spay and neuter. And also, I'm very thrilled to be up here with two women that work very, very hard for spay and neuter. Nicole with Alley Cat Guardians, and Pam and the rest of her colleagues that work with the Humane Society. So thank you.
Again, it is very important for government to recognize the importance of spay and neuter, and I just want to applaud and thank the board on behalf of my staff in the county. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a resolution from the board. If you'd like to come up, I'll be glad to present it to you. Why don't you all of you come up, since you've all had a part in this. Effort that we've seen from private groups to address this problem. The county has spent about $900,000 on this program so far through our SCATE program. And so with the public and private sector working together, we're bound to get this population down. Later on in this agenda, we are going to be addressing the animal shelter, and you know, spay and neutering is going to be a part of it. This has to be part of the solution, because we can only build a shelter so big, and we're focusing on adoptions, but reducing the population of unwanted animals is a key part of this program. So let me just read the resolution from the board. I'll just read the last part. Therefore, be it resolved that the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim the month of February 2009 as Spay and Neuter Month, and Tuesday, February 24th, 2009, is Spay Day USA, and urges the citizens of Stanislaus County to observe the day by having their pets spayed or neutered, or by sponsoring the spay and neutering of another person's dog or cat. Now, remember that last line. You know, they always take donations, too, to get this done. The president of my Rotary, we had a meeting yesterday, Dr. Klein, and he said he donated part of the day spaying and neutering too, so it'd be good to have the veterinarians all pitch in, maybe a day once in a while to help on this great effort. So we've come a long ways. We've got a long ways yet to go, but this is more than just a great start. And really, thank the Alley Cat Guardians, the Animal Advisory Board, which has been very supportive of this program, and the Humane Society, too, for all their work, along with the commitment of Stanislaus County. Yeah. There you go. Would anybody like to say anything further? Okay.
Always me. I want to especially thank this gentleman, Supervisor DeMartini. He's been very supportive, and we appreciate every effort that he has made.
Okay, thank you. That's very nice of you. I didn't even have to pay her to say that. So that was good. Anyone else? Okay, it's a great job, and I think that we're finally on the right track here. And if you want to stick around, we've got an agenda item coming up that's is of some significance. Okay. At this time, we will have our public comment period for anyone who wants to address this board on an item that is not on the agenda. I have one written request from Deborah Harper.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper, and my address is P.O. Box 1224, Modesto. I've been here several times over the years. I have been inappropriately suspended from the Stanislaus County Public Library. I'm on the third suspension, and Vanessa Chopek and her staff have used fabricated false information to accomplish this task. After the first suspension, I was in shock, didn't believe it could happen. How can anybody bully a peaceful individual in this community? I let it go. Immediately thereafter, Janice Milliken of the Stanislaus County Law Library suspended me simultaneously from the Law Library. I was seriously in shock at this point, not understanding how people can fabricate false information and manipulate an individual's ability to function in the community. I started documenting everything and mailing everything to individuals within the system in our county. The reason I'm sharing this was I started speaking about the growth, and I tried to bridge the communication gap with using growth, how our community is growing, and can we be further respectful, and how can we dissolve the special interests and the clear manipulation that exists from the special interests and specific individuals in the community that want to be able to tell people how to do what when. And do this respectfully without causing anybody to be offended. While I've been trying to diplomatically do everything, because I'm shy and quiet and not capable of a lot of things that I've been falsely accused of, I've been experiencing felony threats currently. And it falls on deaf ears because nobody wants to listen to me because of the false fabricated information. I think this is totally absurd. I think it's wonderful that we can sit here and pat each other on the back and talk about safety and everything, but I think I'm still in search of the correct, appropriate path to correct the fabricated and false information in addition to staying safe. I don't feel safe. I have been in between addresses, inappropriately oppressed, year after year after year, while the hostility has escalated. I've documented the information, and nothing has moved. And I am in prayer because, it's biblical, but unfortunately, you can't just sit down and cry about it. I have to try to make improvements and take care of myself and be safe in the county. In addition to the point that I didn't get to was that I was using the communication about growth to try to bridge the gap. Specifically, I had an officer that was called to the Safeway store, Officer Inacio. These people are priceless human beings. But when the grumpy security guard called him after I asked if I could sit at the cafe and eat my dinner salad that I had just purchased for breakfast, but it was early in the morning, even though it was a 24-hour store, they thought it was odd. And he falsely accused me of wanting to sleep, and he threatened to call the police, which he eventually did. Several officers showed up, and Officer Inacio's first response was to take me to SBHC. And I peacefully and calmly asked him why. He says, well, don't you need a place to sleep? And I respectfully and peacefully, pointed out that SPHC was not a hotel. And this is the automatic response that I've received in the documentation. Everyone wants to head down the mental health path instead of accepting the fact that somebody might be irresponsible somewhere and just clear up the irresponsible behavior and, you know, be respectful with each other in the community. I haven't been this direct before. I'm very nervous about it now. I just pray that it's taken in the correct light, in respect, and in prayer that this all can change sooner than later. Felony threats are not comfortable. Falling on deaf ears is not comfortable. The duress, I've recently was able to do some research on Penal Code 136, Penal Code 136, 1, 139, and 140. They speak very clearly in contradiction to these threats, you know. And thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else from the audience who'd like to address this board on an item that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. Does anyone on this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion. Okay, motion's made by Supervisor Monteith. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Grover to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried 5-0. We will now move to item B5. Approval to proceed with the design phase of the animal shelter project and to initiate environmental review. That's sure been a long time coming, so I'm looking forward to the report. Patty, you going to be giving this?
Yeah, I will be doing the introduction, and then we have several staff persons that will participate in the staff report. Chairman DeMartini is absolutely right. We're all excited to be in the boardroom this morning to discuss with you the next steps in the design and construction of a new animal shelter. It is a project and a process that has had many, many ups and downs over the last several years, has created tension between cities and county and among animal support groups and public agencies, and we're just happy to find ourselves in this position on this morning to discuss with you next steps in this process. I'd like to start by providing you a brief update relative to where we are in our ongoing discussions with the cities. First, we did offer two cities that have traditionally contracted with the county for services the opportunity to continue that relationship in one form or another. Five cities have indicated an interest in continuing to partner with the county, and that on a long-term basis. Those are Modesto, Ceres, Houston, Waterford, and Patterson. Thus far, we have met with Modesto, Houston, and Waterford. Meeting with Ceres is scheduled, and the meeting with Patterson is pending. We are working to develop interim agreements under the guidelines that the board had established at staff's recommendation. We had requested interim agreements to be in place by March 1st, with those cities continuing to express an interest in partnering with the county. We may miss that deadline by just a little bit, but we are on track with the five cities and are continuing to move forward with that process. A key component of the relationship with the cities will be an equitable cost sharing formula, which will allocate costs we anticipate based on the number of animals entering the shelter, the percentage of animals entering the shelter from each jurisdiction as a component part of the whole. The county and cities are now working to form a management committee that will provide day-to-day oversight and direction. That management committee will ultimately morph to a joint powers agency for those cities that have an interest in having an ongoing formal relationship with the county in the administration and operation of the shelter. And you can see from the map that's on the screen now the cities that have indicated that interest. Again, Modesto, Ceres, Houston, Waterford, and Patterson. And as I had indicated to you, all have provided to the county an initial commitment to continue discussions relative to a long-term contract.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Patty Hill-Thomas from the Chief Executive Office. I'll be followed by Interim Animal Services Director Dave Young, Tim Fedorchik, and one of our main architects is here today, Mr. Richard Raw. Simply put, we're asking you today to allow us to take the next steps towards the completion of the animal shelter project. That would be to proceed with the design phase, to finalize general contractor pre-qualifications, and to initiate environmental review on the new site that's being recommended. Before I get to the detail, I'd just like to thank and acknowledge the board's Capital Facilities Committee, Supervisors Grover and Monteith. You spent a good deal of time with us, met with Warren Friedenfeld, the other main architect on the project, and we appreciate your attention to that and ideas and thoughts. I'd also like to thank the project team. This has been a couple of years and it's coming. It's made up of CEO staff, members of the Animal Advisory Board, and a City of Modesto representative. I'd like to tell you that plan before you today has been reviewed with all the partner cities. And in addition, we've had a very detailed planning session with the City of Ceres about site opportunities and what we can do together in the new site that's under consideration. The plan presented to you today, you'll see it in a little bit more detail, and we've provided you a great level of detail, and it's available for the public as well, is more compact, we hope more efficient, more feasible. The site offers us opportunities that the old site did not, and the strategy that includes a low-cost financing is intended to focus this project on the most affordable approach in these very difficult financial times, all aimed at moving the project forward. So if I may, I'm simply going to go through the task overview, and you'll see the checks come up. We've completed, with your approval in the past, many of the major assignments, the needs assessment, the conceptual planning, discussions with the partner cities that continue. The detailed program plan is before you today with two options, and pre-qualification of 16 general contractor teams who are interested in the construction of this facility. What we have left to do is to initiate the environmental review at the new site, to initiate the bridging or design documents, secure the final agreements, select the contractor and award a construction contract, and complete and occupy the facility, which we're projecting to be complete in 2010. Each and every one of those individual steps will be returned to your Board of Supervisors prior to proceeding with this project. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Dave Young.
I'd like to start my comments with an introduction. I'd like for Dr. Quan Stewart to please stand. Dr. Stewart has never been introduced to the board formally before. Dr. Stewart came to the county in May of 2008. Dr. Stewart spent 11 years in private practice, and Monica Nino and Jody Hayes from the Chief Executive's office were able to lure him away from a very lucrative practice of running three hospitals in Southern California to come here. And I'm happy to say that the intended results have exceeded our expectations. Dr. Stewart is saving the county hundreds of thousands of dollars in costs. He has instituted many new medical protocols. He's instituted a program of follow-up with all adoptees 3 weeks after the adoption to inquire about the health of the animals. And he's creating a database that will give us scientific medical info to help us combat disease in the shelter. He's lowered the disease rate in the shelter. He has been out in the community meeting with the local veterinarians and establishing bridges of communication, and being the charismatic fellow that he is, the local Veterinary Trade Association, Professional Association, the Northern San Joaquin Veterinary Medical Association invited him to become a member of their board of directors. So we're very happy to have Dr. Stewart. Stanislaus County has two methods in which it is attempting to lower the pet overpopulation in Stanislaus County and to reduce the shelter intake of animals. The first method that we use is canvassing. It's our door-to-door canvassers who are really the enforcement arm. And we've been working very hard in our joint powers agency meetings with the partner cities to impart to them how important it is to have that door-to-door canvassing enforcement effort. And I believe that we're making headway there. The second most important component of our effort is the SCATE program, Stanislaus County Alternative to Euthanasia, which is our voucher program. The SCATE program was started in December of 2001. And in the last 7 years, we have sold 11,212 SCATE vouchers. However, in those 7 years, it has cost over $900,000 in taxpayer subsidy to pay for those spay and neuters. In 2002, the shelter intake was 21,466 animals. 7 years later, in 2008, the shelter intake was 21,232 animals. The average cost to the taxpayer for all those spay and neuters was over $80 per animal. So what we've done in 7 years is spent almost $1 million to maintain the status quo. Now, the silver lining to that, I suppose, is that all of you have been provided 21 years worth of statistics at the animal shelter. And it shows that the human population has gone from 300,000 to over 500,000 in the last 21 years. And in spite of that steep curve of the increase of human population, we have been able, with the SCATE program, to maintain a status quo of the shelter intake, that the number of animals entering the shelter has remained relatively stable over those 21 years. And we're proud to say that in the year 2008, we had our lowest rate of euthanasia in the last 21 years. We've gotten it down to 59.9%. It should be much better than that. I think we can, but we're happy to say that we're making progress. Alternatives to our government efforts of the SCATE program. We did a survey of the veterinary clinics in Stanislaus County. We called all the veterinary clinics and surveyed their prices, and we determined that by using the SCATE program, the citizen is able to obtain spay and neuter surgery anywhere from $33 to $200 cheaper than on the private market. We know that the Stanislaus Humane Society, which was formed in 2007, has been seeking donations, and as you heard today, have been out sponsoring spay and neuter clinics. And the Alley Cat Guardians, since 2002, has spay and neutered 2,472 cats, and they specialize in feral cats. We also did a survey of 116 public shelters in the state of California to determine if anyone out there has any grant funding sources, and we could not locate any public shelter that receives any grant funding sources. We contacted the DJ&T Foundation, which is the Bob Barker Foundation, amongst many others, and what we discovered is that those foundations do not provide money to public shelters because public shelters are not no-kill shelters. Because we euthanize animals, we are not available to receive grant funding from them. We have applied and submitted our application to the Maddie's Fund for Maddie's Fund monies. However, their representatives have told us that they consider it to be an uphill battle for a public shelter to receive Maddie's Fund funding. If we were to receive the funding, it initially is for a three-year program to build collaboratives with private nonprofits, and you don't receive funding for actual programs until after that time. So we have researched as many options as we possibly can find, and we don't see any other options out there other than if we create our own solution. We also commissioned a study, and I think all of you have received your copy, done by graduate students at Stanislaus State University. And we asked them questions such as, how effective is the SCATE program? And we asked them, how many spay and neuters would we have to do every year to actually lower the intake, the number of animals entering our shelter, and to lower the pet overpopulation? Their conclusion, done with quantitative analysis, was that the SCATE program is not effective in lowering shelter intake, that it's only marginally cost-benefit effective, and that it would require up to 9,274 spay and neuters per year to reduce the number of animals entering our shelter. Animal Services has proposed an alternative that we believe would help us reduce the pet overpopulation problem and reduce the number of animals entering the shelter. And that solution would require a policy decision by this board. And we're not asking the board for that decision today. What we're asking today is that you allow in the design of the shelter square footage that would allow for an expanded veterinary medical clinic, that would allow for a low-cost spay and neuter clinic that would be available to all the residents of Stanislaus County. There are options that would be available to that clinic. The county could operate the clinic, private veterinarians could operate the clinic, or we could create a collaboration of government, private nonprofits, and the private veterinary medical community to operate the clinic. And so what we're asking today is for you to allow the design, the square footage, and the decision on whether we actually use that space for a low-cost clinic can be made later down the road. We have initiated contact with the private veterinary community. We do have a meeting scheduled next week to meet with them and explore these options with the private veterinary community. We think it's a win-win if we can have a collaborative effort. And so our recommendation is that you allow for the design of the square footage so that the option of a low-cost clinic is there available, but the decision doesn't have to be made today whether we actually open a clinic or who operates it.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, good morning. My name is Tim Fedorchak. I'm with the Chief Executive Office in our Capital Projects Division. In 2007, we came to you with the result of the original needs assessment conducted by George Myers and Associates, and we looked at that needs assessment relative to the capacity of our existing facility. Our existing facility, which was constructed in 1972, located on Finch Road, has a capacity for approximately 262 animals. The needs assessment has shown that using the number of animals intake into the facility, that unmitigated the number of animals that we would need to hold within a 10-year period projected out to 2018 would be 944 animals. That's if we did not put into place aggressive programs to minimize the number of animals coming into the facility. But in lieu of doing that, we think it's a balanced approach that's necessary to put in place these aggressive programs, which may include an increased number of adoptions, foster care, public education programs, particularly in the area of responsible pet ownerships, and aggressive spay and neuter programs. And by doing so, we think it's a balance of the program requirements versus a facility answer to these needs. Doing that would limit to a peak number in the foreseeable future. Our capacity needs to 476 animals coming into the facility. We'll introduce you to the architect of the facility in just a moment, but the recommended plan for the facility, given a multi-agency facility, would actually total 577 animals. And the reason for that is, in addition to the holding capacity, We have a little bit of holding in some of the other areas. Recovery animals coming from the animal clinic, animals preparing to go into recovery, the intake from the public that comes into the shelter. So there's a couple of other small holding areas in addition. So what we've recommended is a program for 577 total animals in the multi-agency facility. And if we were just to look at the counties, just Stanislaus County's requirements without our partner cities, our capacity needs would total 337 animals. So for that reason, we think it's important to develop two programs and to continue along the line of having two facility programs available. Because we've asked the cities to make a commitment relative to their participation in the shelter and the operations of the animal services, our question to them that they're evaluating will depend on whether or not we should pursue a facility program designed for the multi-agency needs of 577 animals or just the county-only facility of 337. I think we all know that Modesto and Ceres are the largest outside of Stanislaus County that really depend on that larger capacity. There are a number of considerations that we looked at relative to siting of the facility. And as you'll see, and we'll show you the site diagram that we're proposing, that a site on the buffer area of the county's public safety center along Crow's Landing Road is recommended. The reason for this site is that it's geographically central within the county, and we believe that it provides greater flexibility and potential for growth and change over the long-term course of time and as needs change. It also allows us a lot of flexibility in the way the facility is laid out. There's also the benefit of going to the Crow's Landing Cornucopia Way site at our Public Safety Center buffer is that it allows for us to leave behind the existing shelter, which could potentially be available for alternative uses, either by other cities or by nonprofit organizations. One of the other benefits, of course, of going to the Cornucopia Way Crow's Landing site at Public Safety Center buffer is that we have the potential, by siting this facility, to take advantage of existing county facilities that are compatible, that have meeting room facilities, for example, where public education in animal adoptions, for example, and pet ownership could happen, for example, adjacent to the Agricultural Center and Harvest Hall. The one thing that this does, though, because we are recommending a site at the Public Safety Center, would be that new site would require that we initiate environmental review for location of the facility there. This is an aerial photograph of our Public Safety Center site, with north being up in this diagram. And you'll see the proposed site is indicated as an approximately 5-acre piece of property right at the point where Cornucopia Road enters and exits onto Crow's Landing Road. So we have right there, actually, the other advantage that we've got an existing equestrian facilities and animal facilities which are developed. So we think there's some common functionality there. The just to the west of that site, and if I can get the pointer to work here, this just to orient you, this is our public safety center, the county's jail. Hackett Road to the north with our community services facilities. And then the Ray Simon Regional Criminal Justice Training Center and our Agricultural Center are located right in this area. Service Road is located to the south. This pie diagram simply shows, and I've got two of these. This one happens to show the full multi-agency program with the cities and the counties' involvement, but it's just to show you the distribution of space in the proposed facility program plan. And that the vast majority of the space, nearly 50% of the space, is required just in the accommodation of the animal's holding area. The other spaces are pretty evenly divided amongst all the various components of the program, everything from the adoption center and food preparation areas and food storage and supplies and everything, the veterinarian facilities. Did I say that twice? The county-only shelter, again, about the same proportion in space, the vast majority of that being in animal services holding. I should point out that the full program, the multi-agency program, is a little over 33,000 square feet. The county-only program would be about 24,500 square feet. With that, I'd like to introduce Richard Rau with Rau House Friedenfeld and Associates, and he's our project architect.
Mr. Chairman, fellow board members, Mr. Robertson, Council Doering, pleased to be here today to speak about the shelter. I'm with Rau House Friedenfeld and Associates. We're basically a animal care specialty architectural firm dedicated to the health, safety, and welfare of animals. I've been involved in animal care for over 25 years. A Cal Poly graduate, native Californian, and my wife and I actually own a veterinary hospital down in Southern California. My father's been in the animal service related industry actually he's passed away now, but he was worked with Challenge Foods for over 47 years. So as a young boy growing up in the state of California, I got to see a good cross-section of the state as it developed over the course of years. From a philosophical standpoint, our mission for this project is simply not just to build a place for housing animals and to store animals, but rather to design a community asset which will achieve the following goals and objectives. To design a new facility which will encourage adoptions and help put them in loving homes. To design a facility which by its nature not only reflects compassion for animals, but also serves to educate the community in responsible animal care. Through proper design, we strive to create a positive social environment with certain functions within the new shelter which will act as a catalyst to both embrace and reach out to the community, similar to that like a library or a community center. Also, we want to provide a design with amenities needed to help ensure the success for that very special bond between the adopter and the pet. That's very, very important. Also, we'd like to create what I term as a unique sense of place that is an enjoyable facility to visit for both children and adults alike, and one that is also fun and very educational. And lastly, recognizing the difficult budgetary constraints given the present economy we have here in the state of California, we plan and we will strive to design this facility based on cost effectiveness, efficiency, and durability over the course of the years. I understand everybody has had a chance to review the program. I'm here to answer any questions you may have regarding the program at your disposal.
Any questions from the board? Well, I do have one. I'm sure they're just holding back because we've been talking about this for a long time. Part of the problem with the old shelter is the construction materials that seem to harbor bacteria and disease. How would this new shelter eliminate this problem? Because it's been a constant problem throughout the years.
Yeah. Bacteria is, if not mitigated, it adds to the problems associated with disease. And there are several fronts that we use. One is in the floor systems. They have special antimicrobial systems that we can design into the floors. The floor systems also, we look at having smooth monolithic systems, such as resinous epoxy systems going in the kennel areas. The mechanical systems that we use, one of the key ingredients is to have an active animal exchange. I know here in California, we do have heating and cooling issues that have cost impacts. And what I've been working on with our mechanical engineers over the past 15, 20 years is a kind of a recyclable system. We're moving more towards green systems as well. But we also look at using what we call UVC emitters in the supply plenums, because often what we're doing now is we're reconstituting and reusing the air. We're diluting the air, so to speak. We're not bringing supply air in and then just exhausting it and then resupplying the air, because that gets expensive. So from an economy standpoint, what we've been working on, what we've been developing, and not only in shelters and but also veterinary hospitals alike, is a kind of a recyclable system where we're using the air. And when we bring it back into the system, we call it about a 50% makeup air. We bring it back through the plenums, and we have UVC emitters that we put, lights, that are actually installed within the plenum to sterilize the air as it comes back through. So it eliminates the bacteria. As a result, odors are reduced because odor is a byproduct of bacteria. The hygiene of animals in terms of their paths of travel, how we circulate in the intake areas, those are very important to us, and we address those in the design in terms of the choice of materials as well.
This facility will have quarantine.
Yes.
Also.
Yes.
Do we have animals with diseases that we can keep separate from the other ones that are healthy?
That's correct. There'll be an animal triage area. They'll be basically come in, and animals will be come into that area, and then the animals will be duly quarantined or isolated. And I think the chief veterinarian will overview that process. But we do have it broken down into several different housing components, quarantine being one of them, especially not only in terms of upper respiratory disease for the feline populations, but also in terms of making sure that we don't get any or we limit the amount of, say, for example, parvo in terms of our canine breeds. So that's an integral part of the process, and we recognize it as an inherent component in terms of for successful animal control and health control.
Any further questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, if we may then, we have 8 recommendations to make to you today.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.
One is to accept the CEO's report on the update of the city-county discussions, approve the facility plan as presented, authorize and direct the staff to develop those public policy strategy options for future consideration for low-cost spay-neuter, to authorize the design and project team to proceed to the design phase for 2 options. I might note, I should have said earlier, each of our partner cities has now assigned an individual to work on the actual design and project team as well. Authorize us to retain the necessary professional services within the project budget. Authorize us to reform and amend the architect's agreement for the work required. To direct and authorize the Planning Community Development Department to initiate environmental review for the buffer area that's been shown at the Public Safety Center, and to contract for professional services within the budget needed, such as traffic and noise studies. Direct the auditor to transfer $60,000 in funds already set aside by your board for this project for the expenses related to these recommendations. And to finally approve a reimbursement resolution related to the expenses for the construction of the new shelter, so that if we do proceed to financing construction, the county will allow it to be reimbursed for its expenses occurred in the early part of the project. And with that, we would all be available and happy to answer any other questions you may have.
If there are no further questions at this time, we do have some people that have wanted to make a public comment about this. Dr. Michael O'Brien.
Michael O'Brien. I'm a veterinarian at Mays Animal Hospital. Been in the county as a veterinarian for 32 years and lived here since 1954. I think the new shelter is long overdue. It's the addition of the spay-neuter component of it has a lot of veterinarians a little nervous about just what's going to happen, but I personally feel that it is a needed addition to this shelter design. I have a lot of concerns. The county cannot run it as an entity. Any kind of hospital or any veterinary-run clinic in Southern California, you know, your own county hospital here, really runs at a significant negative each year. The cost of the SCATE program has been presented, And it truly is an expensive program, but it does reflect the cost within a private veterinary practice. And if the county ran their own shelter, the proposal by Dave that was presented at the Animal Advisory Committee was a great proposal. There are 12,000 animals that need to be altered a year for this to break even based upon the county-run component of it. So you have to understand, just doing the skate program in my private practice, that probably 15% of the scheduled skate programs don't show up on the day of their surgery. So if you have even 15% of those 12,000 don't come, or if you don't truly do 12,000, and especially at the time, if Alicat, I think the only way the county could do 12,000 is if it's a joint process with, like, Alicat Rescues, Humane Society, in order to get those numbers. If they truly are going to open up their own and think they're going to do 5,000 in a year, that will significantly impact the total numbers that come into this spay-neuter clinic for the county. And I don't want you, if you think you've spent a lot at $900,000 in 7 years on the skate program, you may be spending a couple hundred thousand each year just because you don't meet your quota of 12,000. So you have to understand those cost, that cost analysis. I really do think that we can get to 12,000 in many different ways, but you know, over the years, our shelter has had about 25,000, 22 to 25,000 input for, you know, in the 70s and 80s and up until now. This 22,000 that we're having, I think, is higher, Dave, isn't it? Over the past, you were down around 18 or 19,000 for a few years in the late 90s. Yeah, so it fluctuates. So you've had this high of number and higher in the 80s. So with the county population more than doubling in the period of time I've been here, there hasn't been really that significant of an increase in overall animals to the shelter. So you have to understand that people take better care. That's primarily the reason why. People take better care of their animals when they truly assume that responsibility of pet ownership. I believe personally, from what I've seen over the years, that the people who create these problems for the county to deal with are the ones that need special help, and so they're going to need to be funded. So the county may have to fund that. I think there's some private people who are going to fund low-cost spay and neuters, or no-cost, I take that back, no-cost spay and neuters. And the most effective means of controlling this animal problem we've had is, as Dave alluded to, is this canvassing program. This was initiated, I believe, you know, probably the late 90s. And prior to the vaccination clinics, every month, the county would have people go out and actually knock on doors, see who has animals, see who has licensed animals, unlicensed animals, and gave them an actual ticket, which motivated them to come to the clinic, excuse me, to get the rabies vaccination and the licensing. And I think with the increase in fee up to $100, it makes them now think more about getting the animal altered. So these are people that would act and could act in a monetary sense to buy that skate voucher. But there are countless numbers of other ones in certain areas within the county that have multiple pets, have absolutely no means of caring for them in a proper sense, even the basic care of feeding or cleanup or housing is not done for these animals. That is the true part of the population that I think has to be addressed in order for this program to work. It's a great idea. We need a new shelter, but we truly need to have some other means of getting the enforcement arm working so that the ordinances that we made, you guys, some of you were involved in the making of the ordinance. I guess there's some legal aspects of how to enforce it, but part of it was that if you feed an animal for 14 days, you then own the animal and are legally responsible under all of the rules of that ordinance. And so it's real critical, because the change in the dynamics of the population of animals in the shelter used to be probably 14,000 to 18,000 of that 25 were dogs entering the shelter. that is, we've done a great job as the veterinary community and the county to reduce the number of dogs entering the shelter from just say it was 15,000, I believe it's around 8,000 now, Dave, a year. So we've done a great job on the dog population, but the cat population, unfortunately, has created this major increase from probably 2,500 when I first came to now it's around 10,000 to 12,000 cats. So really the feline population and the addressment should be, you know, what your importance is on, because it's the feeding of cats by people who are well-meaning people within various portions of the community that create this problem. Feral cats living out in the farming community do not constitute a big part of the problem that you have. They are within cities, within communities that have been built up, so we need to address that. I have clients who just for, you know, for their own personal reasons won't license their dog because they feel like, you know, until the cats actually get a requirement of having to be licensed as well. Look at the cost involved with the county, and there's so many different ways that some of the monies that you get, that you're spending on this, can get reimbursed to at least help some of the county's expenses, because cats, you know, they're great animals. I've got two of them, but they really do reproduce, and a lot of people, including, you know, some of my clients and even members of my family, have a real affinity to feeding outside animals, and it does create a problem. So we need to address that ownership, you know, try to get an enforcement arm that we can actually reduce the numbers of animals that people have and that people care for, and get the ones that are born out there altered so that you don't have more.
Hey, just a minute, Doctor. We do have some questions for you from the board. Supervisor O'Brien, I think I noticed you have the same name as the doctor.
That's pretty amazing. Actually, I didn't have any questions for Dr. O'Brien. I have questions for staff that we can address at the end. Every question I thought of, Dr. O'Brien answered in his statement. So,
mm-hmm. I do have one.
Just to clarify, I've never spoken to Bill about this at all. So, even though we have that last name that's the same, we don't really speak about, you know, our views on it. But I know he shares it. You know, I'm concerned for the veterinary community down the road. I want to do everything possible to ensure that that the county doesn't try to run something that they're going to be in a big negative. And I'm hopeful, and just from having Quan as a new addition to the county shelter, he's really got a good way with people. We've got a meeting set up, and I really think that the private veterinary community will come on board and run this thing for you in a way that it won't impact your pocketbook or my pocketbook in that way, sense too.
I did have one question of you, since you are a veterinarian. Should the the county do these low cost spay and neuters, you know, in the facility? Would the veterinary community see that as the county being in competition with the veterinarians who have to hire people and pay rent? And do you see that as any kind of a threat to the?
Well, I'm sure certain practices, it truly is going to be a threat to them. I mean, if a large percentage of their income comes from spaying and neutering already, then it will impact them. But the majority of the veterinarians, I feel, are quite busy. You know, the level of care demanded by the client has gone up. I mean, when I first got out of school, I mean, if it was $300, people would have their animal put to sleep. I mean, put to sleep was just like a common thing that even my older partners would talk about. And it's not really discussed. I mean, anything and everything will be attempted by people to try to ensure their pet's quality of life. And so I don't think it's going to personally affect, it won't affect me, but I don't think it would affect a lot of the veterinarians. But if it just stays at spay neuter, you know, that's the whole key. I mean, if you as a county are running it and it's spay neuter only, and you know, maybe the initial vaccinations, then that's fine. But if you get down to the bottom line and you're only altering 6,000 a year and you're running a deficit of 300,000, and then, well, maybe we can do this or that or the other thing to try to help augment some of those funds, then I think for sure you're going to have some people that are concerned. And there's no real assurance that the county won't do something like that if it had to do it. Or even if a single private veterinarian, you know, were running it. You have to break even or make a profit. You have to break even at spay-neuter, and it's difficult to do at $45 a, you know, a piece.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Mr. Robinson, you have a comment?
Yes, I really do appreciate Dr. O'Brien's comments, and I think his comments are right on point. What will ultimately spell the success of a spay-neuter effort in this community is a partnership between the veterinary community, the county. Dr. Stewart is doing an outstanding job of bridging the relationship between veterinary community and the county, and a recognition that the county's interest is in controlling the pet overpopulation problem, and a recognition also that the responsibility for the care of the health of the animals really is a veterinarian's responsibility, and the county's sole function should be to control the population of the animals and the intake of unwanted animals into the shelter. So I sincerely appreciate your comments. I think you're right on point. I think your focus is right where it should be. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I have another request to speak from Mr. David Cerruti.
Good morning, Supervisor DeMartini, gentlemen. I'm chairman of the Animal Advisory Board. We unanimously support the recommendations of the animal shelter and the CEO's office and encourage you to approve their requests. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cerruti. Is there anyone else from the audience who would like to address this board on this issue? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Lori Daly Johnston, Secretary of the Humane Society of Stanislaus County. Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to reiterate that I've seen so much progress. I've been involved in animal activism for many years, along with the coalition, starting with Alley Cat. And I think today is the best day I've seen so far. I'm very hopeful hearing from Dr. O'Brien. He's right on point. He's spot on. But the main thing I'm so hopeful about is that we all agree that none of us can do this alone. Had we been able to do this alone as a private nonprofits, private veterinarians, or government, it would have been done. So I'm just happy to see that we are coming together and reaching out and trying to work together to solve the problem, which has obviously been ongoing. And I'm very impressed with Mr. Young's presentation. The care and thought that he put into it, I think, is also spot on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Young, you did have a good presentation. I hope you enjoy many more years with the county. Is there anyone else who would like to address this board on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I will bring it back to the board for a decision. Supervisor O'Brien.
I did have a question for staff, and that has to do with the SCAPE program. We came to the conclusion that the SCAPE program is not effective. I would ask then, what was effective in keeping the level of intake constant over the past 6 years with some tremendous growth in the county? Shouldn't SCAPE have some sort of recognition for that?
Yes, I think I was alluding to those sentiments in my presentation. Maybe I wasn't specific enough about it. I think the fact that we have remained stable, relatively stable, in the number of animals entering the shelter is a testament to the efforts by the nonprofits, the private veterinarians, and the SCAPE program, because I refer to it as a status quo. But without those efforts, such as SCAPE, I think the number of animals entering the shelter over the years would have risen right along with the population.
And I agree, too. Spay and neuter is really the key to this overpopulation, and that is why I have pushed to try to get more funding for spay and neuter. As we have this opportunity in front of us, a potential low-cost spay and neuter clinic right alongside of their animal shelter, it's intriguing, and I think we need to keep that option on the table. So as far as the staff recommendation, I say, yeah, we go forward with that option. Dr. O'Brien and I have not discussed low-cost spay and neuter clinic. However, I agree with him that government should not be running it. I'm going to say something really shocking. Government can't do things as efficient as a private business can. And that shouldn't be too shocking to anybody. Once government gets their hands on it, our costs will go up tremendously. Dr. O'Brien is correct in, hey, we're a little short. Let's start offering a couple more services to gap the income that we need. And that's great foresight because that's exactly what would happen. Someone comes in with an emergency, of course we're going to see that animal because we're caring. Our doctors are going to say, yeah, we want to see this animal. It's dying. And before you know it, we'd be an emergency animal hospital and just continue right on that path. And again, we can't do it as efficient as private business. Another question for staff is as we design this with this extra 1,500 square feet for low-cost spay and neuter, as we go down the process and we determine maybe there's another group that is more capable of doing it, and maybe they take our old shelter and turn it into low-cost spay and neuter, is this going to be on like the side of the building that then could be not built if we decide that there's a better option out there?
The square footage, including circulation and the things that go with this space, is about 1,353 square feet. And it's not on the side. It's going to be just a bigger area for more than one veterinarian to work. So if it was a decision not to have either immediately or long-term multiple veterinarians providing spay-neuter there, we would not equip it. So a subsequent decision that your board will make will be actually how to equip it with the medical equipment. And it could have some other uses. But we do think it's important just to build the core square footage ground space now, because we're not creating a separate clinic. We're just looking for an expanded area where the veterinarian works.
Okay. And just back to the efficiency, and I think the Alley Cat Guardians could say that they've done their 2,400 spay and neuter. It's probably a lot cheaper per animal than we have subsidized. And that just shows that sometimes government, or most of the time, government isn't very efficient in what we do. But again, spay and neuter, I mean, that's how we're going to address this problem. And I'm in full favor of keeping it on the table because that's what I believe in, spay and neuter. That's how we're going to address it.
If you would indulge me for a moment, Tim, if you could go back to the slide presentation, and it should be slide number 7. I think it addresses what Supervisor O'Brien is talking about. Among the options, if we were to operate a low-cost clinic, it's a little further. And one more, I think. And one more. We're basing our model upon the Humane Alliance of North Carolina. The Humane Alliance of North Carolina is a nonprofit organization that trains people, mainly nonprofits, private organizations, on how to run low-cost spay and neuter clinics. And so we're basing our theory upon their proven model. They have three separate clinics that they trained and helped open in California. Two of them are very close to us. One is the Sacramento SPCA, and the other is the Hope Animal Foundation in Fresno. The Sacramento SPCA opened in May of 2007, and they did 7,000 spay and neuters in their first year. The Hope Animal Foundation in Fresno has two full-time and one part-time veterinarian, and in 2 years' time, they did 38,000 spay and neuters. So the option that we think is available to us in Stanislaus County is if we built, as the county government, if we built space for the clinic, that either the private nonprofits or the private industry, such as Dr. O'Brien, could use this model, this training from the Humane Alliance, and yes, they could operate that clinic at a more effectively than government would, and they could achieve these levels of numbers because it's been proven.
If we were able to do 12,000 spay and neuters a year, after a number of years, shouldn't we see a declining number of spay and neuters we'd need to, or we would have in front of us?
Yes, sir.
And so by funding our own spay and neuter, if the county were to run the low cost, it should be a declining client base.
Theoretically, hopefully, yes.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Doering.
Yes, that's me.
Oh, I see. Supervisor Chiesa, you pushed Mr. Doering's button.
There. I have two buttons in front. This is something. I just want to, a comment. I agree with Supervisor O'Brien that it's not necessarily the county's job of doing spay and neutering. Although I would agree we leave it in because I see a lot of synergy here today, which it seems like we're all rowing in the same direction. It's how to get there. And I think that's a positive compared to what I'd seen a year, 2 years ago. So I would, I'm going to speak on behalf of leaving the space in, but I agree that exploring all options with private nonprofits is a much better solution than us doing it ourselves. The second thing, the two options, I really hope, I know exactly why we're doing the design, and I'm going to agree with that. But I know our strength lies in our partner cities, and I would hope that the cities, our partner cities in Modesto and Ceres, Houston, Waterford, and Patterson agree. If we don't look forward to more partnerships between the cities and the counties, I think, we're all going to struggle, and I think this is a great opportunity, and I would hope that they see it as an opportunity, too. So, if there are no more comments, I will make a recommendation.
I don't think we're quite done with comments yet.
Okay.
Okay, well, I don't necessarily always have to have the last word, but I would like to comment on this. It's time we move on with the design of this shelter. I like these recommendations a little better than I was never really quite thrilled with rebuilding that old shelter. Knowing what it's like to remodel something and the problems that you encounter and the cost overruns that can and probably would have happened to us, I think that we are better off with a new facility in a different area so we could design it the way we want rather than have to work within the confines of what we had and still try and keep the shelter open while the remodeling was going on. I think the location is going to be a lot better for us, and at least everything will be new. As far as the cities, I've said this before. I want to make it clear to the cities that you're either going to jump on board with this project, or you're going to be running your own shelter somehow. Now, this is a real good deal for the cities. I know that these are tough economic times, and the cities don't need something else heaped on top of them, but we have to move forward with this project. And the best and the cheapest way for them to do it is join in with the county and pay their fair share of operation of the shelter rather than try to have their own shelter. Sometimes it works for some cities, and I know Turlock and Oakdale have had their own shelter for many years. It seems to work with them, but some of the other smaller cities would be much better off in joining in this joint effort in this new shelter. I would like to comment on staff recommendation 3 also about the low-cost spay and neuter clinic inside the shelter. I'm okay with this, for right now. I would like to talk to some of the other veterinarians too to see if there's any feeling that the county is encroaching upon what normally the veterinarians do for a profit, and since they have hired staff and pay rent and have to make a living at this, I don't want to see the government moving in and taking some of their income away. I also would express some sort of concern that should we go ahead with this, that if we don't wind up expanding this and doing free or low-cost veterinary care, because that's absolutely where I would have to draw the line. What happens if somebody brings in an animal for spay and neuter, and say the animal has fleas or it has some type of injury, or would the county then feel obligated to do this at low or no cost too? That I don't want to see happen, because the veterinarians have had extensive training. They have a degree, and they hire staff, and they have to they compete with each other to keep their costs down. I don't want to see them competing with the county for veterinary care. Probably the spay and neuter is okay, but I'd still have not made up my mind on that. Although for today, for authorizing the architects to design a space for that, I'm okay with it. I realize these are tough economic times, but I feel that we have no choice but to move forward with this. These are good recommendations. The site location is better, and I'm in favor of these 8 recommendations today. Further comments from board members?
I'd like to make a motion. We accept agenda item 5, the approval to proceed with the design phase of the animal shelter.
That. Okay, motions made by Supervisor Chiesa, seconded by Supervisor Grover. I assume you're recommending all 8?
All 8, yes.
Same with you, Jeff?
Yes.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried. 5-0.
Thank you.
We have no scheduled matters this morning. We will move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Patterson-Newman Gustine Historical Societies regarding the location of a pioneer cemetery at the former Naval Air Station in Crow's Landing.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a letter from R&B Electronics protesting the low bid for the Stanislaus County Juvenile Justice Center Fire Protection and Security Electronics Upgrade Project.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office of the County Council.
This board has received a letter from Industrial Electronics System, Inc., protesting the low bid for the Stanislaus County Juvenile Justice Center Fire Protection and Security Electronics Upgrade Project.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office and County Council.
This board has received the claim as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claim and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Board of Supervisors report. Anyone have something to report this morning?
No.
I do have one. Supervisor Grover and I went to Washington, D.C. this last week, along with our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Robinson, and David Jones from the Chief Executive Office. We had a very busy schedule. I think we had 9 meetings in one day. We met with our congressmen, both Radonovich, who was available that day, and Cardozo's staff, along with Feinstein and Boxer's staff. We went to the Department of Justice and the Army Corps of Engineers and met with our lobbyists. I was very encouraged by our meetings. The high-tech crime unit is something that was of great importance to me, and there is money available through the Burns JAG grants that I think that we will be able to get. It is important that we try to provide staffing and equipment for this unit, and I'm very encouraged that that money will be available to us. We had an extremely good meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers over the Oristemba Creek Flood Control Project. I think we have a better understanding now of where this project is and what kind of cost-benefit ratio is acceptable to them for funding of this project. I also must compliment Congressman Cardozo's office for helping us in this effort in securing the money that we have got for the study of this project. And hopefully this year, is the way it's moving along, we will be able to come up with the final recommendation so this flood project can begin, assuming that the local match can be made. It was a great step forward in this last meeting that we had. We also had to discuss interop radio equipment funding for departments such as the fire, highway patrol, and sheriff's department being able to talk to each other during an emergency. Overall, it was a very good session. It was a whirlwind tour. We're in and out in a day and a half, and I think we've accomplished a lot. So it was a very good meeting. I would also like to make a comment about the letter from the historical societies about the Crow's Landing Cemetery. When we were at Congressman Radonovich's office, I did ask him to have his staff look to see if there was any aerial photographs that the Navy might have when they built the base back in the early 40s. He has directed his staff to do that, and if those photographs exist, perhaps they will show the location of cemetery markers, so we will know the exact spot of the cemetery. I have been out to the site. The historical societies of Newman, Patterson, and Gustine think that they have located the Pioneer Cemetery. It is a small plot, about a quarter of an acre, and I think this site, if it really is the Pioneer Cemetery, and we will find out, this should be preserved, and a fence and a marker would be appropriate for this. So we are working on that. There is also some sonar equipment that has been developed that may be able to detect grave sites without disturbing the remains. So this is something else that we'll have to look into. But I just wanted to make that comment about that letter, because we are looking into this. Other comments from the board? Okay, legislative and fiscal management report. Mr. Robinson, I'm afraid to hear what you're going to have to tell us today.
Yes, we again have no good news coming out of Sacramento. The county staff and department heads are continuing to contact our local delegation, expressing to them the adverse impacts on the delivery services to our community from a continued deferral of funding. Our estimate for the month of February, should the deferral, which has started, continue, is will be about $11.75 million. Should that stretch to 3 months, the number grows to $27.92 million. And if the administration's proposal for a seven-month deferral is ever enacted, we're looking at $53.5 million. The Senate and Assembly are meeting today but are not scheduled to vote on the budget today. However, there is some discussion about a possible vote sometime between Wednesday and Friday of this week. There's also speculation that the legislature is waiting to see what the economic stimulus package will be offering California, and so is holding any final determination relative to the state budget until they have a better idea of any possible benefits of the federal economic stimulus package on our local government efforts.
Okay, we will now move to closed session. Mr. Doering?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have several matters to discuss in closed session today. Two items are anticipated litigation that involves two cases pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision C. In addition, there will be conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation. The case is Clark & Sullivan Builders, Inc. versus County of Stanislaus. That's Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 612057, and that will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A. We do not expect a report out, although we may report, depending on board action, may report out on one item.
This meeting is adjourned.